Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Oh, yes. Hey there. I am Carol the Coach, and I am here to talk to you about sexual addiction. Now, you may have Googled me before. You know I'm Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I'm out of Indianapolis, and we have the only show on the internet exclusively devoted to sexual addiction. And I'm a CSAT, that's a Certified Sexual Addictions Therapist, and I've always done radio. I've done drive time radio, so this is like my passion. I absolutely adore disseminating information that'll help people to live their best life. And what I know to be true, and I've said it before, addicts who go through recovery and who are successful make the best human beings. They take their life further. They figure out the true meaning in their life, and they just do a fantastic job. Now, I know if you're in the throes of addiction, if you love somebody who's an addict, if you're wondering if you have an addiction, but it's very likely that this is something that's really hard for you to believe. And part of that is because you either are in external crisis, you're having trouble at work, the wife or husband is furious with you, you hate yourself, you know, you feel that vulnerability that leads to the four famous feelings: shame, guilt, embarrassment, or humiliation. Okay. If you're experiencing those feelings, what I know to be true is there's probably no way that you can feel good about yourself. And so here I am, a professional who's been in the field for 35 years, a sexual addictions therapist since probably 8 years. Worked with thousands of people because I'm a workaholic. I'm not proud of that, but I am. I love what I do, and I work really hard. And I got to tell you, people who work recovery and do it well absolutely figure out what priorities and values are most important, and they strive for them. And those values include what I consider to be the best: honesty. And what I mean by honesty is that, you know, oftentimes we say, okay, what are your deal-breaking behaviors? And that might be prostitution or exhibitionism or voyeurism or massage parlors or pedophilia or exploitation. Yep, it could be any of those things. For me, the root of the problem has to do with honesty. Are you authentic? Are you transparent? And are you honest? Well, probably not if you're listening to this show, unless you're in really super great recovery. Because if you're in a strong recovery program, you are amazingly honest. I'm going to tell you a little story about myself. I'm 60. When I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I was in love with a man who went in and out of recovery for alcoholism. You know, when he was an active alcoholic, I didn't see him very much. But when he was in recovery, he always would come, you know, over to the house, and we just were very, very close. He was a roommate for a while. He was just an amazing man. You know, when he was actively drinking, I still knew he was an amazing man, but I didn't want anything really to do with him. One day he came over, and again, we saw each other. We were very close, but there was no kind of commitment, and we were sitting on the swing, and he had his arm just kind of around me, and I was talking to him, and took his arm off my shoulders, and he said, you know, I can't do this. And I said, well, what's going on? And he goes, well, I am really working a recovery program. And what I thought to be true is something that applies to anybody who's single. And that is, if you're working a recovery program, you're not in an official relationship, you need to be single for about a year to work on your issues. And so that's what I thought he was referring to. But he said, no, in actuality, I have a girlfriend. Wow, I thought, I didn't know he had a girlfriend. I knew he dated. That was fine with me. But I didn't know he had an official girlfriend. So his honesty was twofold. One is he was sharing that with me because it would have been dishonest for him to have done what he always did as a single person but not be single. Even though he wasn't married, he just had a girlfriend. And then he said, the real bottom line is, Carol, that I'm pretty committed to her. And it would not be right, and it wouldn't be rigorous honesty if I hung out with you because I'm just attracted to you. We've been, you know, more than friends for a long time. And she thinks I'm exclusive, and I just wouldn't want to cheat her like that. You know, somebody else could have been hurt. Somebody else could have been mad. Somebody else could have been really feeling very betrayed. But I was impressed with this rigorous honesty, and I knew to myself, said, wow, he is working that recovery program. And of course, when you care about somebody more than anything in the world, you want them to work their program, even if it isn't going to get you what you want. So I encouraged him. I said, fantastic. I'm glad you told me. You know, I'm not mad. I'm glad that you have somebody in your life that you really care about that much, and I wish you the absolute best. Well, remember, he was an alcoholic in recovery. Later on, a family relative had a DUI, and it had been about 15 years. And she was really worried about putting that on her application. She said, hey, Carol, will you call, and let's call him Joe. Will you call Joe and ask him who he used for an attorney? And, you know, if he ever had to deal with any of that. And I said, sure. So I called, quote unquote, Joe. Joe didn't call me back. And I called Joe a couple days later. I'm very thick-skinned. I am coated with Teflon. If somebody doesn't respond to me, I assert myself a couple of times, but I don't take it personally. I know that that's about them. And so I called him again for a second time. and I didn't hear anything back. And you know what I assumed? I thought he is still his lady friend. Maybe they're married for all I know. And he is really abiding by their sacred contract, no matter what that was. Girlfriend and boyfriend, engaged, married, whatever. I felt good about that. In the meantime, my family member went ahead and was honest, and she got the job anyway. And so, you know, that's always a tough issue, especially for sex addicts. You know, how transparent do I need to be to an employer, to a prospective employer, on an application? You know, what do I need to say and what don't I need to say? Now, if that's you, I talk about speaking in generics. Speaking in generalizations, because you and I both know, if you said you had cancer, people would probably feel a special empathy for you. And if you said that you were a drug or alcohol addict in recovery, be a little suspicious, but especially if you said, you know, you had 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I believe that they would admire your stamina, your strength, your perseverance, your tenacity, all that stuff. But if and when you say sex addiction, you know, what if you were to say, I've been in recovery from sex addiction for 2 years? Unfortunately, in a lot of cases, that connotes something other than what it is. You know, there are 20 types of sexual addiction, and most people don't know what that is, and so they assume that has to do with incest or children pedophilism or, you know, venereal disease, sexual diseases. And so as we in the therapy business talk with the media and educate people, you as an addict or a loved one of an addict have to be pretty careful about how you present that information. And not to your loved ones, not to your spouses, but I'm talking about to the public, to prospective employers, people at work. You know, what I know to be true is if you're in counseling with me, nobody other than your spouse needs to know that. And what you talk about in your sessions, nobody's business. You know, oftentimes I have a man or a woman that'll say, yeah, my wife or my husband wanted to know what we talked about. And that's when I suggest, hey, bring your spouse in. Let's talk together. But truly, if you want to talk about what you're discussing in therapy, that's absolutely fine. But bottom line is, therapy is confidential, and you don't have to do that. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, this is just one therapist's opinion. Tonight, I have a special guest who has lived sexual addiction, and she has lived recovery, and she's going to be talking about what that has been like for her. Jace Downey views the silence around this issue as not only unfair but deadly. You know, I say that, and at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, this is somebody that was recommended to me, perhaps Jason's man. Let's just say that this addict in recovery is really going to talk to you about what the experience was like and how recovery was discovered, and how Jace views the silence around this issue as not only unfair, but deadly. Jace says that choosing to step out of the shadows and into the spotlight helps to end the silence around sex addiction. Every week, hundreds of people tune in on YouTube and social media as she openly answers questions about her experience as a recovering sex addict in a way that's just as approachable as it is informative. So there you go. Jace is a female. kind of thought that, but I realized as I was saying that, I have not seen her documentary film, Suddenly Celibate. And I am going to, after this show, get on YouTube and Google Jace out what she believes to be true, because she's on a nationwide journey investigating what it really means to be sexually healthy. Boy, isn't that something that addicts really question. Once they begin to get their own routine down so that they can feel like they're in good, solid recovery, the next question is, hey, what is healthy sexuality? And let's face it, as a general topic, we don't know what healthy sexuality is because we don't talk about it. So I am really excited to be interviewing Jace tonight, and she's really going to enlighten us about her story, how hard it was to come out, and all the feelings that accompany that, including fear. So, Jace, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach Show. How are you tonight?
Hi, Carol. I'm doing really well. How about yourself?
Well, I am doing well, too. I was telling my listening audience that as soon as I hang up, I'm going to have to Google you because you actually have a YouTube, it's kind of like a television station where you discuss this issue and with social media, you openly answer questions about your experience. Tell me, how did you develop that, that format to disseminate this kind of information?
Well, it seemed kind of an organic way to reach people nowadays. I was receiving a lot of questions the more I began to talk about being a sex addict, and I kept getting the same questions over and over, whether that was people emailing me or just talking to people in person. And so for the sake of efficiently spreading information and kind of answering these same questions, I thought, why don't I record it? And that way, anyone who's interested in my experience or my take on sex addiction and recovery in my own world, they can just watch at their leisure and get whatever information it is that they're seeking.
Okay, so let's just cut to the chase. As people are listening to you tonight, if they want to get more information about you and they want to go to YouTube and watch you, how do they do that?
Sure, they can find me through my website, suddenlycelibate.com, or I'm on YouTube under the same name.
Okay, excellent. And tell me, because you came so highly recommended from several of my fellow colleagues that are certified sexual addictions therapists and also from the SASH organization, tell me how you figured out that you had a sex addiction and, you know, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, sure. I didn't know that sex addiction existed. As I've found, a lot of people don't. There's not a lot of information out there about it. And so for me, in 2014, I had reached a place where I was so isolated and so alone. I had been dealing with a problem I didn't know how to address. And I'm certainly not a take-it-lying-down type of person. I had tried self-help, I tried therapy, I tried so many different things and nothing would take it away. And so I just kind of resigned to the fact that I was broken, that I was incapable of functioning the way other people did or ever finding happiness. I really felt like a fractured person. And I had since moved to a new city and a new state and left a life of wreckage behind me where I had been living, a lot of people who had politely but very seriously asked me to not be in their lives anymore, and just a lot of embarrassment and humiliation. And once I moved out to Austin where I live now, I started meeting new people, really nice, really wonderful, respectable people, and I just felt that I had no business being around these people. And that I would just, you know, be destructive in their lives like I had been in those of those who had been in my life before. And it kind of just occurred to me, if I can't function, I don't provide anything to the world, I'm lying all of the time, and I can't be around people, I genuinely just don't have any reason to live. Not in the dramatic, depressed way, but just logically, there's no purpose of me being here. And so I started planning my suicide. And I was very disconnected from my family as well. No one really knew me. And it was so painful to live that way and to lie all the time. And I was just basically going to work, putting on a happy face, coming home and being alone. And so I had this just honestly, it wasn't even a thought. It wasn't even my own. I don't really know how to describe it. But I knew that I had turned to sex in the past as a way to feel better or feel nothing, really. Feeling nothing was superior to the way I felt pretty much every day. And it just had a thought occurred to me that, you know, if that can be used in the same way that drugs can it have the same damaging effects? So I thought, what the heck? What's another day? What's another week before you know, committing suicide? So I just hopped on the internet and I Googled, you know, can sex affect the brain or, you know, something to that extent, and just got so much information about sex addiction. And there was a 40-question self-diagnosis, of which I aced and or failed, depending on how you look at it, answered yes to pretty much everything on there. And it really prompted me to look into what sex addiction is. And all of a sudden, I was finally seeing my story. I was finally hearing the same issues, the same pain that I had been in for as long as I can remember, and realized that maybe I wasn't an inherently broken person. Maybe there was a real issue with a real solution. And so I went to the next available meeting that discusses sex addiction and recovery around it. And I was just home instantly. I hadn't seen a single person in there before, and I knew them all to be my family right away. And I just cried the whole time. And I did not have any problem recognizing or admitting that I was a sex addict. It was a perfect fit for what I had experienced.
Well, you know, I talk to so many clients that they, like you, feel so reassured when there's an actual diagnosis that helps to explain what they're feeling so that they don't feel like they're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if there's a real diagnosis, there's a real solution, which I did not
anticipate. Yeah, there's treatment out there to help that. So how hard was it for you to come out?
Oh, the hardest was coming out to my mom. We'd always been really close as you can be to an addict, me, not her. And I respect my mom so much. She really raised me and my two sisters pretty much by herself and really sacrificed so much of her own life in order to raise us. And I felt like I had failed her so very deeply by who I was and the life I had led as an addict. And so when I went home for a visit, towards the end of 2014, and I'd been in recovery for a little while. I wasn't sober yet, but I had been in recovery. I had to sit down and tell her, Mom, there's something I need to talk to you about. I told her, I'll explain it to you broadly. I won't tell you any details. If you want, you can ask me any questions you'd like. I brought materials with me, pamphlets, books, you know, things that I had been using to learn about it myself. She and I are very similar. We like to learn about something, especially something scary. We want to learn about it. It makes us feel better. So I brought a lot of materials, and we talked all night. And it was so painful for me to admit so many things, certainly that a mom does not want to hear. But she was so loving and supportive and just full of grace and kindness. And, you know, the first thing she said when I got done, kind of given the main spiel, was, you know, I'm so sorry you've been going through this alone.
Oh,
and
boy.
So,
how unconditional is that?
Absolutely. My mom is, I honestly, if there's a better mom out there, I want to give that lady a hug. Like, I mean, she's really great. And so little by little, I told a few people close to me, just because, you know, eventually they're like, where do you go every, you know, Thursday night? Where are you at Saturday morning? You know, they started asking. So I started letting a few people in here and there. And the first day that I really you know, my first day sober after really hitting rock bottom, or even rockier bottom, was the first day that I also had the idea for the film. And so I knew at that point that so much of my pain had come from thinking I was alone in all of this and not realizing what the problem was, and then, of course, not being able to fix it as a result. And so as I was driving home from my first meeting sober, the idea for the film came, so I knew I was going to have to be public about all of this. So I started doing my research. I started really formulating what it was going to look like, what it was going to cover. And then before releasing my first video, which was really me coming out, explaining to everyone I know what I was going through, what I'd been going through, I sat down with my sisters and their husbands and told them. Of course, I didn't want them to find out via the internet. So we had that conversation. And at that point, I had been sober for a few months. I definitely knew more about recovery and addiction from all the research I'd been doing. So it was a little bit of an easier conversation because I was able to say, hey, here's the problem. Here's what's behind it. Here's where it comes from. And here's how well I'm doing in fixing it. And they were all very receptive. They're, you know, they had some questions, but really they just said, how can we help? What can we do in this? So, and, you know, I asked my mom for permission, just kind of her blessing on me doing the film and talking publicly about sex addiction. It's not something that everybody looks highly on yet. I think that'll turn at some point. But, yeah, just being open about it and talking about my experience and, you know, just explaining to them that might be dark, that might be gross to you guys, that, you know, that might be all these things. Here's why I think it's so important to do that. And they all gave me their blessing. And so the week I came home from that visit, I shot and posted my first video online. And I thought those who knew me would watch it. But it actually turned out that thousands of people watched it, and I got a flood of emails and other people who had been struggling with similar things or struggling with something else entirely, but just, you know, able to talk to someone about it. And just the reaction I got was not what I anticipated at all. Those who were close to me in my community of recovery gave me a lot of warnings. They were very concerned about me going public with it. And honestly, I didn't get one mean thing. Nothing negative came from it. I had got so much love and support from people close to me, people I hadn't seen in years, extended family, strangers, people I had never met and had no connection to. The amount of compassion that was shown to me that day and every day since, honestly, still just blows my mind a little bit.
You know, I would think that people would worry about your safety as well as people may not take you seriously. I mean, clearly, when I disseminate information to doctors and nurses, you know, people that you would think would know better, oftentimes they say, oh, that just be boys being boys, or, oh, you know, women just like relationships. They're not sexually addicted. I mean, they minimize or justify it. Did you run into any of that?
I've gotten more, like, curious skepticism, I would say is the best way to put it, in the sense that, like, sex addiction, is that real? Like, what is that? But not anyone being particularly mean about it. Just being on the internet, people tell me weird things or mean things, or I get strange emails and the like. But what I kind of figured is, you know, maybe everyone's not going to take it seriously, but some people who need that information will take it seriously. So that's enough in my mind. It doesn't have to be something that everybody really grasps onto. I certainly could have used this information 2 years ago. And if it's something that other people can find useful, that outweighs all of the others in my mind. And that's what I told my
absolutely.
Mom, as long as she was concerned
and
for my safety.
Obviously, I always ask people to come up with 50 personality traits that are strengths. And in the top three, one of your strengths needs to be that you're courageous and also authentic. It's like once you share the shame of having this problem, I mean, you went full force to help others. you did that 12th step right off the bat.
Well, kind of the way I explained it to my mom, and she was very concerned. We went through the whole, and I had already, you know, when you talk to my mom, you got to come ready with all sides of the argument. You have to think it all the way out on your own and then talk to her. That's, you know, that's how we communicate. So I'd already thought of all of the things. And, you know, when she was talking to me about the different concerns and everything and just the potential hardship that might come from it, or embarrassment, or meanness, or, you know, whatever it is, I kind of told her, Mom, I already put myself through the greatest humiliation a human can face, losing your integrity, losing your dignity, losing yourself and your soul by your own means. That's mm-hmm. that's the lowest you're going to get. So not a challenge to the universe or anything, but bring it on. I've already done the worst I can to myself. And so it wasn't as scary as someone who has something to lose. And at the time I didn't. And still, I would make the same decision.
Oh, that's fantastic. So now, did you have any fears at all?
A lot of my fears came from my coworkers knowing what that would mean for me mm-hmm. professionally. That was a big fear. Another was, you know, what is that going to mean down the line for me with new people coming into my life, being very public, kind of adds a whole different flavor to somebody. But mostly I just had faith that, you know, I was put in a position where I did feel comfortable speaking out, and just had faith that my higher power would protect me through that.
Well, I'm glad you talked about that higher power, because I was going to ask you, what does faith mean to you? I mean, everybody has a different definition of faith. So what's your definition of faith?
That's a really good question. I really struggled in this aspect in the beginning of recovery. I came from not a frighteningly radical religious background, but enough of one where that's a huge place of where my shame came from in this area. And so I really didn't want to buy on to the spiritual side of things. And I kept hearing God. I couldn't, you know, God, you know, that's all I could hear in it. And it made me very angry. And I really struggled with that. And I finally realized, through the help of a lot of people with way more wisdom and experience than me, that, you know, it doesn't matter what you believe in, you just have to believe in something. And so mm-hmm. I thought, okay, you know, what does mine look like? And it's like, you can make it up. It can be anything. And who's to say one's right over the other? Just because a lot of people believe in one doesn't mean that that's real faith, that that's real spirituality, no more than anything else. So for me, that means giving up all control in my life over to something who sees the big picture, I guess is the best way to put it. I'm here on the ground floor. I can do the groundwork, but I don't know the big picture. So I'm not the best person or entity to make the decisions, because I can't see everything. So for me, that's really following my heart and my gut instead of my head. Nothing but trouble up there. And honestly, like, I would be nowhere without the higher power stuff. That was the game changer for me. And people from my past life, if, you know, they heard me saying this stuff, they would think I had been abducted by a cult and would be very concerned for my well-being. Hearing the 180-degree turn I've taken on spirituality and higher power things, but it has proven time and time again that I'm being looked out for, that my interests are being watched out for. I'm always put in positions of new learning and opportunity. The right people come into my life at the right time. And if that's not the doing of something, I don't know what is.
Oh, absolutely. Do you have any regrets at all?
Honestly, I wish I would have either. I did try to do my research. I did try to look into it a bit. I wish I would have gotten a little more help as far as social media goes and that stuff, because I was off the radar my whole life. I was very much a hidden person. I was living the double life, so I certainly didn't want anyone looking at me. So I'm out there. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on YouTube. I have a website and stuff, but I don't really understand the trends. I don't understand how people really communicate on social media and everything. So I'm kind of like doing trial and error. I wish I would have gotten a little more education in that regard so that I could either present things in a better way or reach more people. That's just kind of a very foreign world to me. So it's one I'm still learning. But I don't regret speaking out at all. Not a single bit, not any day, not for any minute since I have.
You know, it's interesting because I tell addicts that as important as it is not to engage in your deal-breaking behaviors, what is most important is that you be honest, you be transparent, and you be authentic. And that means that you don't hide who you are or what you're working on. But I don't necessarily tell people to advertise it, you know, because it's not necessarily. And so I say, find people that you can be honest with so that you can feel the beauty of what that is like to be your real, authentic self, but do be careful. And you exemplify just the opposite. You're shouting it from the rafters. You're on social media. You're doing YouTube. And I'm wondering, any way, shape, or form caught up with you when it came to an employer, neighbor, family member who might not have known?
I mean, definitely nobody knew before
right.
I came out about it. So I think it was a big shock to a lot of people. I'm very fortunate to live in a very open-minded city. I think that's really to my benefit and have really
and that
great
would
people
be where?
Around me. I live in Austin. So, you know, our motto is keep Austin weird. So I'm the least shocking person walking around this town.
I thought you were Cisco or L.A. somewhere. Austin. So that keep Austin weird. That's the motto,
keep
huh?
Keep Austin weird is our motto. Yeah. But someone asked in a meeting the other day, we have a new women's meeting here in Austin. They said, how do you guys, when you do tell people, how do you tell them? And a lot of people described how they don't tell them. And I said, I tell them, you know, just the same way I do, I'm an editor, I'm a videographer, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a sex addict, I have two dogs, I come from Albuquerque. It's part of who I am. It does not define who I am, and it's not my fault either. So nobody
I was gonna
has
ask you, do you know
shocked,
how you develop sexual addiction? Because it actually comes from one of two things, either some sort of trauma as a child or you know, some sort of habitual behavior that escalated before you even knew it.
I think it's probably a combo of both. The childhood trauma is a ongoing mystery that I'm allowing to unfold when the time is right. That's kind of something that I accepted would be presented to me when my higher power felt I was ready to deal with it. We're not sure in my family what went on, but we're all pretty certain there are some big events that did happen, or even just coming from abandonment. My parents were divorced when I was really young. That can have a really big effect, you know, the separation from that and everything. So definitely then there were habits. I actively chose, and I didn't know it at the time, and I really wish I would have, and it's another reason I want to get information out there. I actively chose when I started getting in a kind of a rough place and I wanted to get out of it. I was like, well, I'm not going to do drugs. I know all those stories. And I'm not going to drink. I watched my father be an alcoholic and several other people close to me. So I thought, okay, that's addictive. I'm not going to do that. That would be dumb. Oh, but here's this other thing that, you know, produces a good feeling or a numbing feeling, or really for me, it was all about power. It had nothing to do with sex, very little to do with sex. It was all about being in control, feeling powerful, feeling numb. And so I thought, boom, loophole. And then definitely repeat behavior started taking place at that time, to the point where it wasn't even like something I was deciding to go do. I would almost wake up and find myself in the middle of acting out behavior and be like, whoa, how did I get here? What am I doing here? Very weird, very scary stuff when I look back at the decisions I made and the really, like, honest to goodness, life-threatening behavior and situations I put myself in. It's hard to imagine that that was me.
So, and I want to ask you, because clearly there are a lot of people that believe men should have men's only meetings and women should have women's only meetings. And then there are addicts. I just had one today in my group. He said, you know what? What I know to be true is when you're really in recovery, it doesn't matter whether women are in your recovery meeting. It's not in any way going to affect you negatively or trigger you or blah, blah, blah. However, there are a lot of wives, spouses of addicts that for whatever reason they think, oh my gosh, my husband's a sex addict. The last thing I want him to be in is a meeting with a woman sex addict. So what's your feeling about that, both from your own perspective, how comfortable are you with men's meetings, two, do you think it makes men uncomfortable, and three, can you understand why a wife would be concerned?
I am a huge advocate for mixed meetings.
Okay.
Mixed meetings have entirely changed my life and my perspective. I certainly didn't feel uncomfortable, and I realized it at a retreat last year where I was one of three women at the retreat, and I sat down next to a guy who I'd known in the program for a long time, and he said, "Ben, you're so brave to come sit here with all of us predators." And he was joking, but I realized, I was like, oh my God, that's why I'm not uncomfortable with you guys. I was a predator in my addiction, and so I fit in to some extent with some of the other people in their stories and you know, the control-seeking behavior that I was initiating as well. But what has happened over, I've been in recovery almost 2 years now, and what's happened is that I have gotten a most unbelievable gift to sit in these rooms with dozens of men who are being entirely honest, entirely vulnerable. They are sharing parts of themselves that, you know, the closest friends normally don't get to see, family don't get to see. And what's happened is that I am incapable of objectifying people anymore based on hearing their stories, listening to them, seeing the pain, seeing how interconnected we all are. And I agree. I'll hear someone's story or they'll hear mine and it'll be like, oh, we could just interchange them. It doesn't matter that I'm, you know, someone just said it on Saturday. They said, it doesn't matter that you're a young woman and I'm a middle-aged man. Our stories are so similar. Our experience is so similar. And so it's completely changed the way I look at men and how I expect men to treat me. The guys in there, they've, you know, taken me under as a sister or a daughter or, you know, a really close friend. There's so much love and respect there just for me being a person, not me being a woman, and not me being a sex object of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
I have never had a bigger shift in my feelings or perspective than being in the mixed meetings. And also, there's a lot of recovery in those meetings that the separate meetings might not get, especially for being a woman sex addict, where we exist. We absolutely exist, but there just aren't as many of us seeking help right now and in those meetings. So it is a great benefit for me to be around that kind of experience that comes from men who have just been in the program longer. So that is super great. If they feel uncomfortable with me, I have had a lot of men come up and talk to me about how uncomfortable they were when they first walked in and saw me sitting there. And in time, they had the same experience that I was having, where they were hearing my story, they were hearing my pain, and they were realizing, oh my gosh, that's a person. That's not a woman. That's a person. And really, it altered their perspective just like they were doing to mine. So it's this really awesome kind of joint effort that none of us knew was happening, but it's something that has happened over time. And, you know, I've met a lot of these men's wives and everything, and yeah, I definitely understand. We actually had a church here who accepted a meeting, and then as soon as one woman showed up, they canceled it. The church said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We didn't know there were going to be women here. We can't have people just having sex in our church, which anyone in recovery would laugh at, because that's certainly not what's happening at meetings. But that just goes back to a lack of education on what sex addiction is not, And I, you know, some wives who are more familiar with recovery, I think, will be more comfortable with it. Some who aren't might have some of that discomfort, but that's just more reason to be getting this information out there in a way that is approachable to everyone, that's not controversial, that's not scary, and that is really, you know, easily understood. So that's another reason that I speak out, and another reason why I am a huge fan of anybody who helps on this subject, helps couples, talks publicly, does shows like the one you're doing, writes books. My idea is the more information we can get out there, the more faces we can put to it, the more we become people and not just problems.
Well, and you know that we are all pioneers in the field, because even though sexual addiction has been around forever and ever, it has never gotten this kind of media attention, and also it needs more media attention. And truly, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, they're going to be, it's like AA. AA in 1935 was seen as something that, you know, was a moral issue. If you were an alcoholic, and AA meetings were just seen as ways to support somebody, but certainly not a treatment modality that could help work through support. And so I like the fact that we're pioneers, even though, again, there's a lot of bias, there's a lot of discrimination, there's a lot of misunderstanding. And clearly, it's people like you who are evangelists for this and this recovery that are going to make a difference. Now, what would you advise for somebody? You know, I just got done saying that I tell people be very careful. I tell addicts be very careful when you come out, because there are people that are going to pigeonhole you. They're going to think you're pedophiles. They don't understand what sexual addiction is. And they think it's somebody who's committed a criminal offense. So what do you tell people about coming out? What would be the do's and the don'ts, the pros and the cons?
I would definitely, first off, if you have any shame around being an addict, everyone's going to see that, and they're going to put it right back on you. I do not have shame or embarrassment or guilt about being an addict at all. I didn't choose to be an addict. I did, however, choose to be a recovering addict, and that's the coolest choice I've ever made. It's the thing I'm most proud of, and I am happy to tell people that. So when I go out and tell people, like I said, I tell like it's, you know, my job or what I do for, you know, hobbies or what kind of food I like to eat. It is part of who I am, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. So I'd say that's a place to come from. Another is have a support system. Even though I don't feel shame, and I do talk about this stuff publicly and, you know, in my own private life, and I do speaking engagements, that type of stuff. Even sometimes people's comments will hit me hard. It'll just be a certain day or some other things, or there'll be like five in a row, and it will hurt my feelings. It will get to me. And so if I didn't have my support system to reach out to, I think I'd be in big trouble. And I think the best piece of advice is educate yourself. You have to be able to give people information. So when they go, oh, so like a sex offender, you can actually, you know, throw out statistics. Well, actually, you know, sex offenders aren't commonly sex addicts, and sex addicts are not sex offenders, and here's the information on that. Or, you know, be able to talk about it in a way that is research-based, that's science-based, that lets people know, hey, this is a real thing. I'm not pulling stuff out of thin air here. There's a lot of information. There's tons of studies being done on it. It's more common than you think. Not nearly as scary. And it's actually a lot like other addictions that you're already familiar with. So to be able to just speak about it very matter-of-factly, know your stuff, have a support system, and only talk about it if it's something that you don't have any shame. Those would be my three biggest.
Okay, very good. So, yeah, please be careful. If you're not ready to share it, don't share it yet. You've got to get to the point in recovery where it's matter of fact, where you're proud of your recovery, where you realize you didn't choose to be an addict, but you chose to be in recovery.
Absolutely.
So now let me ask you, have you had any funny experiences in this process? Have there been any kind of fun stories that you want to share?
Oh my goodness. I think my favorite one. So my first video that I put out was called Naked in Public. And I got a comment on it the first day I put it up from this stranger on the internet who was like, listen, I'm not going to lie. I clicked on your video because I thought it was going to be some girl naked in public. And he's like, I did not anticipate what actually was going to come from that video. But, and then it actually started a really cool dialogue between the two of us. And he started learning about sex addiction and following my videos and subscribing and all that stuff. And so he like admitted, he's like, girl, I'm not even going to lie to you right now. I thought you were going to be some naked chick, but this is also super interesting. And like, go, like, good for you, girl. And I had like a new supporter in my corner as a result. So I loved his honesty and that he was willing to reach out and share that experience with me. That was one of my first ones and one that kind of was a good moment of relief in a time where I was very scared and very stressed out.
Well, absolutely. And so here this person was, he thought he was going to get to see some skin, and then he watched the video, and he admired you all at the same time.
Indeed. And instead of skin, he saw tears. And
okay, so again, talk about that video that's called Naked in Public, and they can see that through YouTube.
They can, yeah. It's right down, it's, on my channel. Also on my website and on my, you know, we got the Facebook page. We have all of the pages. There's so many things now to keep up with. But anybody who just Googles suddenly celibate, you know, you'll find all my stuff coming up.
Okay. And then on your website and your YouTube, so you give your first and your last name?
I do.
Okay, I just want to make sure because I was going to remind my listening audience that I'm talking with Jace Downey, and she has a documentary film called Suddenly Celibate. Jace is on a nationwide journey investigating what it really means to be sexually healthy. So she talks about her sex addiction and the recovery path that she's taken, and she's determined to help shed some light on sex and the addiction in the United States. You can go to her YouTube channel where she has lots of different videos that you can watch that help understand what this addiction was like for her as well as her own personal story. Now, Jace, you had said that you really kind of felt out your family to make sure that they understood what your intent was, and you got a lot of support. Has there been anybody in the family that didn't get it? Because it almost, you've had this picture-perfect life in recovery. Did you have any, did you have family members that said, don't do it, you know, you'll embarrass your mother, or you'll never find a significant other, or any of that stuff?
I am so fortunate to come from an amazing family. We're certainly, you know, addiction is a family disease. It's not with just one person. So, you know, when we talked about that and me coming out about it, just the risk that was there and also the information that might be coming out, I did not receive any naysayers. And I didn't touch base with my extended family until, you know, I sent them the video. And they all, you know, they were like, we had no idea you were going through this. We love you so much. We're here for you. You know, we support you in what you're doing. We're really proud of you. Not a single one of them. And maybe, you know, I haven't heard from all of them. So maybe there are some who aren't greatly ecstatic about me talking about this stuff. But anyone who has talked to me and my family has been absolutely amazing. And I feel incredibly blessed.
Well, I would hope so, because, again, I think that not only speaks to the incredible city you're from, but certainly a family that wants to support you in any way possible. And really, when I think about it, you must have done a hell of a good job of making them feel comfortable with it. Part of it is the information somebody has to share. So, I applaud you and your family for being so responsive. Has being out affected your recovery in any other way?
In a really positive way, it's helped because I don't hide this from anyone at all, and that is such a huge relief that I can actually focus on my recovery, not on keeping up my, you know, second life of pretending like nothing's wrong and I've got this. You know, my mom, one of the first things she said to me when we had the conversation was, honey, everybody's got something. This is just your thing. You're actually doing something about it, and that's something to be proud of. And so for me, I get to just do something about it, not have to worry about pretending like I don't have a thing, because everybody does. So it's really positively affected in that way. The work that I do, you know, through the website, through creating the film, my weekly videos and everything, it's really time consuming. And I work a regular job as well. I try to, you know, have a social life and, you know, hit the gym, be healthy. I'm trying to do a lot. So in that way, it's hard because I'm very busy all of the time. And that makes it tough. And that does mean that some time gets pulled away from my recovery in some regards. So it is helpful. The other side is that I've had people who have seen my videos go, oh my goodness, you know, I think this is what I'm going through. And I, you know, I'm going to go find a meeting, which is so cool. Like those are my, like, I just like silent sobbing when I get emails like that or messages like that, where people say, you know, hey, this actually did shed some light on it. And I'm going to go seek help. That's it. I just needed to get one of those to make all of this worth it. But I've had people show up in my meetings who have emailed me. And then all of a sudden it is very weird because, you know, I don't want to, I don't even know like how to describe that because it's so important that my recovery stay top priority. But then again, I am like a public person as well. So that has brought up some kind of weirdness, but nothing too terrible.
Well, I applaud you. Now, if for the person that's questioning whether they have a sex addiction, on your YouTube, what would you recommend that they watch?
I think one that I got a lot of good responses to was one of the first ones I came out with, which was Sex Addiction Explained to a Bro. And it was just kind of me retelling a story about a buddy of mine who really did not understand what sex addiction was. And so it was the simplest way I could put it to help him understand what it was that I had been going through. And a lot of people tell me like, oh my God, that's totally different than what I was thinking. You know, thank you for putting it that way or whatever, you know, it is. So that's a very simple explanation of what my experience with sex addiction has been. And I think the second biggest question I get is, you know, how much sex makes you an addict. How much sex do you have to be a sex addict? And that makes sense to someone who doesn't understand sex addiction at all. So I have a video out just recently, the last couple of weeks, that explains the difference between sexuality and sex addiction and my understanding of it. So that could be a good one as well. Additionally, you know, if they're on the website, there is a whole section of the website dedicated to sex addiction. It has a lot of really great resources from people who know far more than I do, who act, you know, like you, they work in this field, they have all the accreditation, they do all of the writing. There's also resources on, you know, that self-diagnosis test I talked about, as well as, you know, the clinical explanation of what a sex addict is, and just, you know, dozens and dozens of links on the website to try to help either, you know, a partner understand what sex addiction is or somebody figure out for themselves what it is and then ways to help or boost your own sobriety or recovery or whatever it is. So that's a good place to start, kind of a one-stop shop.
Okay, very good. And as we end for tonight, is there anything else that you can think of that you would like to share with our listening audience that would help them to understand where they can go, what they can do if they think they have a sexual addiction?
I would say, I know for a lot of people I've spoken with in my own recovery, a lot of people were really afraid to seek treatment because they didn't want to be a sex addict. And what I say to those people, and what I'll say tonight, is if you're an addict, you're an addict. You don't have to be in a meeting to be an addict. You don't get that choice. You do get to choose to be a recovering addict. And believe me, it is a million times worth it to go find out if that is the solution for you. And it doesn't even have to be 12-step. Whatever recovery works, do that. There's a whole wide world of joy and hope and happiness that we all have access to the moment we stop our acting out behavior or whatever the addiction might be or whatever your something is. If you're not working on fixing it, you're denying yourself this beautiful experience, this adventure of life where you're not just surviving, you're actually living. So forget the label, forget the fear, go find out.
Not just surviving. Because I'll tell you what, that's what I said at the beginning of the show before you came on. I said when somebody's in good recovery, they're actualizing their potential and they are being the best person they can be, and they probably would never have gotten there if they hadn't had this addiction.
I agree 100%.
Well, Jace, thank you so much. And for anybody who tuned in, I want you to go to YouTube, look at her documentary film, Suddenly Celibate, go to her website. And again, Jace, that website is?
SuddenlyCelibate.com.
Okay. Very easy, very good. You are an inspiration. Anybody that has an issue, especially women, because they don't have enough, they don't have as many role models. I mean, the beautiful thing about sexual addiction and men in recovery is they have people like Patrick Carnes to look up to and to emulate. So I'm just really pleased that you're so out about this addiction, you're so deep into recovery, and you're really an inspiration. You keep me posted on other projects because I definitely want to support you.
Thank you so much, Carol. Thank you for having me on the show, and these are really great questions. I really appreciate talking with you.
Absolutely. My pleasure, too. You take care, and I mean that. Keep me posted.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so that was Jace Downey. And, you know, you've heard me have female sex addicts on before, and clearly what we know to be true is that there are plenty of women that are sex addicts, but most people see this as a male-dominated problem, and they think it's just boys being boys. And Jace is a great example of somebody who had the addiction, turned it around, and now is being an evangelist for recovery. I really admire her. And, you know, if you have a story that you want to share, all you have to do is email carolthecoach@aol.com, and I'll be happy to speak with you. And we'll get you on the air, too. So we ran tonight. I appreciate you hanging in there and listening, and we will see you next week. And as I say at the end of every show, I bet you can repeat this with me if you've been listening. There will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Have a great week.